From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Outrage at the media has been around since the media existed. But until 2 weeks ago, violent attacks on a mass scale were unprecedented in this country. On that day, a gunman walked into the offices of the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland, and opened fire, killing five journalists and staff members.
This was a targeted attack on the Capital Gazette. He entered the building with a shotgun, and he looked for his victims as he walked through the lower level.
Targeted murder by one deranged killer in no way represents public response to the press, but it did provoke public conversations about how the media is regarded and disdained. While news outlets proliferate, trust in the media is now at an all-time low. So as a local media station, as journalists and as citizens, we're exploring why that relationship between Americans and the news outlets that they rely on is hitting bottom and where to go from here. Joining me to consider the questions are Bill Nygut. He's host of GPB's Political Rewind, a longtime journalist in local and national news. Bill, great to have you on the other side of the mic.
Hi, Virginia. I'm glad to be with you.
Glad you're here. David Hazinski is professor of journalism at the University of Georgia in Athens. Hello, David.
Hi, happy to be here too, and with Bill.
And Michael Barthel is from the Pew Center. He's a senior researcher there. Michael, I want to start with you and the research. Pew's been studying Americans' trust in the media for some time. The numbers from 2017. First, can you tell us what Pew means when they use the term the media?
Sure, yeah. So we try to be careful about that. So we do kind of specify a little more in our question. We say, how much trust do you have in the information you get from, and then we kind of give them four options. We say national news organizations, local news organizations, friends and family, and social media.
Has friends and family always been one of the questions, or is that recent?
No, you know, we've tried to add that in recent years because a lot of times when we ask people about how they get news, we do see that discussion and word of mouth plays a pretty big role in how they actually get news.
So who are the people that you polled?
Well, they're members of our American Trends panel, so it's a little more than 4,000 folks that we poll each time, usually, and we do it kind of an online poll, and we just kind of ask for their responses.
So do they identify themselves by political party affiliation?
Yeah, and we actually see kind of pretty big party divides in terms of trust in national news organizations. So in 2017, about a third of Democrats had a lot of trust, but only 11% of Republicans.
So I don't know if that's any surprise to people here, but overall, how much do Americans have faith in the media?
Well, what we kind of like to say is not a lot of people have a lot of trust, but most people have some trust. So 20% of folks have a lot of trust in national news organizations. But about 3 in 4 have at least some trust. The numbers are a little bit higher for local news organizations. There it's 25% and 85%, respectively.
Yeah, I'd like to explore that a little. But did you ask questions like, should the news media simply report the facts, or should they provide interpretation of the facts? What are the questions like?
Yeah, in a survey, we did actually try to get at that a little bit, and we found that most Americans think that the media should just report the facts and not add interpretation.
So what is the percentage of people who found the news media to be actually biased or made that accusation?
Well, let's see. In 2017, there was, a pretty big partisan gap in this. So 87% of Republicans said news organizations tend to favor one side versus only 53% of Democrats.
Okay. And is there any distinction here between any questions leading to the question of whether people can really distinguish fact from opinion? Because I know that that's become increasingly confusing for consumers.
Yeah. So we recently did a study where we asked folks, we gave people 10 statements from the news. And we said, tell me if this is a factual statement or an opinion statement. And one of the interesting findings is that we found people with a lot of trust in national news organizations were actually better at distinguishing factual from opinion statements. So 39% of people with a lot of trust classified all five factual statements correctly, versus only 18% of people with not much or no trust.
So, Bill, you know, you've been in the business for a long time. Wondering your initial thoughts about the things that we're hearing from Pew.
Can I share with you something out of this morning's New York Times that I think raises an interesting point that Micah was discussing? So, of course, the Times, in their top story, online at least this morning, is dealing with Trump's NATO meetings and the fact that he was aggressive in attacking Angela Merkel and the Germans, as he says, refusal to pay their fair share of NATO costs. So let me read you the first two sentences of the story and ask you all, is this contextual reporting or is this analysis in the guise of reporting?
Okay, let's
President
hear.
Trump wasted no time. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg could barely finish the greetings at Wednesday's breakfast when Mr. Trump launched into a clearly planned attack. It wasn't directed at terrorism. It wasn't against a military threat. Instead, it was aimed at Germany, one of the alliance's most important members. Now, that reported by Steven Erlanger and Julie Hirschfield Davis. They are reporters for the paper. You know, the Times has done extraordinary work, investigative work that we all rely on in big ways. But was that an analysis or was that putting the story into some context? I think there are questions about that.
David Hitzinski, what do you hear?
I think that Bill's question is clearly saying that look, these guys are interpreting this information, and I would agree with him. I think what they're saying is it wasn't this and it wasn't that. Framing that story that way is not reporting it. It's saying that this is how he framed it as an attack. The flip side of this, though, is that people keep saying they want factual information, and they keep watching and reading and listening to things that verify their information. So this is a tough dilemma for journalists over how to report things accurately and how to do this without bias when clearly we have industries driven by bias.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting necessarily that this is an expression of bias, but I can understand why the anti-media folks, the Trump supporters, would see it as such. It may be a perfectly appropriate way to frame the story. But you can understand why some people would regard it skeptically.
Right. Well, let's get into that. That's Bill Nygut, of course, a colleague here, host of Political Rewind and Two-Way Street at GPB. David Hitzinski is also with us, journalism professor. And we also have Michael Barthel from Pew, who's interpreting some of the or telling us about some of the data that Pew has come up with. But this is a fact of what has happened in the media, right? And this is something that you mentioned, Michael, that 11% of Republicans trust the media. Now, the question is here whether or not we have a shared sense, let's say, of journalistic standards. What is a fact and what is opinion? We know from the business of media that objectivity is actually a bit of a ratings loser. So this is a problem. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on that, David, that you are teaching journalism to students. Where is objectivity in that conversation now?
Well, this is the dilemma. We try to instill journalistic values, constitutionally a mandated role for journalists, and then they go to work for companies who just as soon not talk about any of that, and all they care about is making money. And that's all there is to it. A newspaper reporter and a broadcaster are now listed as the worst jobs in America based on pay, on stress, on job requirements, on hours, on everything else. So we're essentially training people for the worst jobs in America because of who they work for. And we have there's not a lot of places to go. What we've been talking about national media, I think local is far, far more important. Because it reaches people's lives. At the end of the day, newspapers have pretty much gone away. Radio, except for NPR and a few exceptions, has pretty much gone away. And television stations are controlled by corporations who care only about money and run these people into the ground. So we'd have kind of a facsimile of what news is on the air. People trust it because they can see they don't have a lot of options. I think we don't have very many options anymore in America.
Well, that's crazy. There are 500 channels and no options. There are, you know, how many hundred thousands of websites that can give us information. But Michael, I'd love to hear from you about this kind of idea of standards. Is that something that people rate? Objectivity, fact-based journalism, is that something that is a priority for news consumers?
Yeah, well, just to kind of put some context on the, you know, I told you most Americans do prefer their news without interpretation, but 40% actually were willing to say that the news media should present the facts with some interpretation. Now, only 29% of Trump supporters said that, so there's, again, kind of a partisan divide there. But I think there is, in these numbers, always some openness to kind of different standards for news reporting.
We did ask a couple of Atlantans on the street. David, did you want to say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I
want to add something here that I think is important. Journalistic standards are essentially set by professional organizations, by Sigma Delta Chi, Professional Photographers Association, Radio TV News Directors Association. But anyone who has worked in media understands that if you work for a media organization, they will intentionally hide their standards so the public cannot see them. And they do that because they're afraid they're going to get sued for violating their standards. So they have decided on the corporate level to not tell people how they make decisions. I think this is unbelievably absurd, a short-term business decision that affects the role of media in America. And there is, I don't know of a news organization that exposes its standards that's corporately based.
Bill, a question for you. You've been in the business for a long time. Have you noticed that change? And this is what we're trying to do. These are our standards.
Well,
moving off.
I will tell you that as a political journalist, I have seen over a period of 30 years, skepticism about our work has always existed. Now, has the Trump administration made it more prevalent today? Absolutely. Is there, in fact, something of a war on the media? I think there is. But I can tell you that when you cover a political story, if you're covering a race for governor, as many journalists here in Georgia are right now, the day that you report a story that exposes a criticism based on some sort of investigative report, other information that comes to light that's critical, say, of Casey Cagle, the Cagle folks, the campaign itself will start screaming and hollering that you are unfair to them, even while they are slipping you information that you can use against the Kemp campaign. So, you know, the problem is, I do think reporters are trained. I don't think objectivity is I think that's a false standard. But they're trained to be fair-minded in their thinking. But viewers of TV news, readers of news, are not trained to respond in a fair-minded way. They're passionate about their candidate. If you in some way criticize their candidate, have a story that makes that candidate vulnerable, they're angry at you because they don't understand why you would want to go after their person. I think that skepticism is understandable. But I don't think it says anything about the quality of the work that journalists do.
So critical thinking skills, this must be something for you, David, as a professor of journalism, something that you think a great deal about and something that we're talking about today with Bill Nygut. He is a longtime journalist, also radio host and colleague here at GPB, journalism professor David Hazinski. And we're also going to return with Michael Barthel, who's a senior researcher at Pew, investigating the relationship between America and its media and a lack of trust. We'll be back with more. Stay with us. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Taking issue with something that you read in the newspaper or hear on TV or the radio is as American as apple pie. Expressing that response to letters to the editor or sharing articles and now posting on social media are also an essential part of living in a democracy and one based, of for a long time on the idea of mutual respect. Gallup and Pew polls now show trust in the media at an all-time low and outright hostility surging. So we're breaking down some of those numbers and exploring why today with Bill Nygut, host of GPB's Political Rewind, David Hazinski, professor of journalism at UGA in Athens, and Michael Barthel, a Pew senior researcher. Also joining us on the phone is Nasenga Burton. She's chair of Mass Media Arts Department at Clark Atlanta University. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. Thanks so much for joining us. But
thank
I do
you.
Want to go back to a little bit on these numbers because we were talking about political party breakdown and trust in the media. Michael, also wanted to know about race. Is there a breakdown in Pew's study on the media by race?
No, we don't. At least in 2017, we didn't see a ton of differences there. We do see differences by age, with older folks more likely to have trust in the national news media than sort of younger adults.
All right. And then for you, Nasenga, you know, Clark University, an HBCU of great distinction, is there an ongoing conversation there about trust in the media?
Absolutely. And trust in the media is a major conversation that's being had in journalism schools and mass media departments and schools all over the country. You know, we're training the next set of reporters, journalists, whether it's broadcast, whether it's online or print. And so we have to talk to them not only about what David talks about, values and ethics that are established by the professional organizations, but also about how to keep themselves safe, how to be respectful, how to be thoughtful and intentional in their reporting. And as well as they're investigating.
Well, we asked a couple of Atlantans. These are college-age kids. Where they got their news and why. Here's what they said.
My name is Charisma Lowe, and my favorite news source would be the CNN app because everything comes directly to my phone. So I don't really watch the news on TV anymore because it's mostly really negative. So I would rather read it, but that's just my personal preference.
My name is Reginald. My preferred news source is social media. Because I don't watch TV, it's easy. It's at my hands every day, and I just look at it all day long. It's unreliable.
David and Sangar, those answers seem familiar to you? We'll start with
yep.
you.
With me, Nasenga.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, yes, those answers are familiar. One of the things that we have to do in our classrooms, because we live in such a hyper-mediated society now, you know, we have to actually establish trust with our students about the media. So, you know, I feel like, and I might be revisionist, but when we were in school, you know, we believed that the media was there to cover stories. Of course, there were challenges as it comes to gender, covering race, and other types of political issues, but we believe that the goal was to find the truth, to give the truth, and to let people interpret their own facts from the information you gave. Now you inherit or receive students who have already decided, you know, that they don't trust the media, even though they want to be a part of it. It might be to restore that trust, or they want to figure out how it works. But it's definitely, you know, we don't get students in large numbers who are like, yeah, you know, I want to be a journalist because I want to, you know, find the truth or give information or help people make better decisions. I don't see a lot of that anymore. I don't know about you, David.
No, I would agree with Nasenga. Many of the people come into UGA's program because of image and air. They think of the image of what a journalist is, but don't really have much of an idea of what you do for a living or what the standards are or anything else. And almost universally, they do not watch television news now or read newspapers. They get much of it online. Ironically, they still trust traditional news sites, but almost all of it is done on a mobile now.
All right. So, Bill, you're nodding.
Well, I'm curious about a couple of aspects of what Nasenga and you, David, are saying about this, that the role of a journalist is to get at the truth. So we all know that in the Trump administration, we have seen example after example of the president making false statements, gleefully repeating them time and time again. I mean, the most classic example, of course, being I had the biggest inaugural crowd ever for
just,
a presidential
just this
inauguration.
Morning, the United States carries 90% of the cost of NATO.
Yeah, so this is an ongoing and a continual matter. It poses a dilemma to some extent for journalists because and I'd really love to hear how the people who are teaching journalism deal with it. Do you, in fact, in your search for the truth, in your desire to report the truth, do you, in fact, call the president a liar? Any number of news organizations have begun to do that. The New York Times has begun to do that. The Washington Post is doing it now. And, of course, all that does is contribute to the feeling among the pro-Trump people, the Republicans, who for the most part are more skeptical, as Pew has determined, of the media than Democrats are, to this notion that we're biased. So how do we deal with that question? Is fact-checking enough? Do you, you know, have a fact-checking page, which every news organization is doing more and more of, right. Not every, but many. How do you deal with that?
Right. You have PolitiFact now, Pundit Fact, all checking facts and trying to get at what is actually the truth in this statement. But good point, Bill. You know, this is the problem, that when you are using this kind of fact-based journalism, you know, PolitiFact has been accused of being biased. Pundit Fact, where they are trying to bring standards that are absolutely just based on fact. But the response is, Republican voters, or let's say Trump's base in many cases, pull away from that, and then the press doubles down. This is the thing, doubling down.
Yes, they do. But at the same time, if you call the president a liar because he says the U.S. is paying 90% of NATO's bills in one story, when you report on some other policy the president is espousing, are you immediately looked at skeptically by the people who don't believe anymore because of you're calling him a liar in one story that you're reporting in a factual manner?
David, so, it sounds like you want to get in on this.
Well, we're missing kind of a giant factor here. The giant factor is it isn't the media from 10 years ago or 20 years ago. We now have a gigantic propaganda machine working for the president. It's called Fox, Breitbart, Newsmax, Rush Limbaugh, that has been vilifying all other information other than their own for 20 years. There has been no response to this argument that everything is not true if it's coming from mainstream media because they're left. And the argument is they're left because we're right, so obviously they have to be left. A specious argument at best. So we have a media environment where people aren't talking to each other anymore. They aren't listening to information from multiple sources, which is what I would prefer. They're just looking for their own verification. But there's a giant machine that's saying that all of those people who are fact-checking, I don't like the word truth. I think truth is in the eyes of people who believe in rabbis and Christian organizations and judges.
Yeah, but David, that doesn't change the fact that if I, as a journalist, am trying to figure out what to say when President Trump tells something that's not true, how I deal with it. Granted that Fox News is going to be a propaganda machine for the president, but I can only deal with myself and how I, as a journalist, respond whether it's Trump or a Democrat. Certainly, we've had examples of Hillary Clinton during the campaign telling lies about aspects of her career. So all of that is correct. But it doesn't release me from an obligation to figure out how I deal with untruths when dealing with politics.
I think you handle it exactly the same way we've always handled it. We say the president says that we supply 90% of NATO, but the facts say or different organizations say, and you attribute it. You present both of those sides, and you let people decide what they want to believe, what the truth is. But we have to present both sides of that information.
Well,
how we always do it.
You're highlighting something that is becoming increasingly clear, that you can hear one fact and then it can be interpreted two different ways. So this is like the difference between facts and reality. I mean, that's the question here. Are we actually sharing a reality? Are we sharing a vision of what is a fact? What makes it a fact? What is an offense? Nsinga.
No, we're not, because we don't live the same reality. You know, we have very different lives, and so I think that we are inclined to see things. I know that we are inclined to see things from our worldview, from our various perspectives, and what have you. I think Bill raised a really good point, and that is, you know, it's really hard to establish trust with users or readers, or however you want to categorize them. When one minute you're saying, you know, the president is a liar, and then the next minute you're presenting something else that he's saying as factual. And so I think that, because we live in such a, again, hypermediated society and people are just inundated with information, they do need context. And a lot of times that is missing. And so, you know, you are, it's kind of like a, an inner conflict, right? Do I present this information without context because that's really what's supposed to happen? I'm going to give you this information. You should be smart enough or not to deduce whatever you need to deduce from this information. Or do I say, hey, this president is lying about NATO, and then say, but despite the fact that this president is lying about NATO, he's actually accurate on this.
Right.
You know, it's a quagmire of sorts. And I think that when you do have that machine that David is talking about in constant motion, and that's really killing the press, like, killing what I would call the legitimate press. And that, you know, causes a firestorm because everybody thinks that they have an idea of what the legitimate press is. But what I would call the legitimate press, traditional news organizations that are invested in investigation as well as discovery, as well as telling stories that are fact-based. You know, when you have those legitimate organizations, you know, coming out and kind of validating, you know, someone who continues to lie. You know, it's one thing to be caught in a lie occasionally, but when it's every day and it's daily and you can track it, then you have to ask, and users have to ask, and readers have to ask, okay, so why should I read the New York Times, or why should I read, you know, this blog or the Huffington Post or what have you?
Nasenga, I'm going to stop you there because we're going to lose Michael in just a minute, and I'd love to hear from him because Pew actually has, that's Nasenga Burton, the chair of mass media at Clark. We also are speaking with David Hazinski, professor of journalism at UGA, Bill Nigut from here at GBB. But Michael Barthel, there are some numbers about people who feel overwhelmed by the facts. What are you hearing from Pew?
Yeah, so we asked people, do you feel worn out by the amount of news these days, or do you like the amount of news these days? And pretty strongly, about 2 in 3 Americans said they're worn out by the amount of news, and that was more common among Republicans. So that comes along with a kind of a series of other things that show Americans having some kind of issues with the news right now. We also, back in March of 2017, we asked folks about the relationship between President Trump and the news media. And we found that 83% of adults said that the relationship between Trump and the news media is generally unhealthy. And then we found about 3 in 4 said that that relationship was getting in the way of Americans' access to important political news. And almost the exact same portion of Republicans and Democrats said that. So we see a few signs of kind of general dissatisfaction with kind of the state of the news these days. Although that said, we don't have historical numbers, so we don't know what that might have been during different administrations.
Bill did mention how the campaigns are messaging him as a reporter, but there's an entire ecosystem out there. It's not just the campaigns. It's everybody who's out there posting their opinion on Facebook and Twitter. Of course, in many ways, the sign of the healthy democracy that people are voicing their opinions. But does the kind of herding mentality, the tribalism the aspect that we were alluding to earlier, does that skew the way the news is covered? Bill, what do you think?
Yeah, of course. I mean, well, it here's the problem. And this really started Newt Gingrich. I think you can go back to 1994 when Newt took the Republicans to the majority in the House. He became Speaker. He was a very outspoken critic of the media. He rallied people against the media. And it was back in those days, and I think, Hazinski, you know this because you were a part of all this. Well, I was there, too. The conservative Republican attacks on the media's bias did, in fact, cause many of us to start looking over our shoulders, to be a little cautious in how we reported political stories, particularly for fear that we were going to inflame that Republican argument that we were biased against Republicans. And that was a terrible thing that we did. It was awful that we became defensive and let that, to some extent, have an influence on how willing we were to be critical of what was happening in the Republican-controlled Congress or at the state level. David, you relate to that, don't you?
Yeah, but I would argue that also makes us more responsible. We have to pay attention. We always have to what other sides say. Anybody who is a good journalist says, look, you are biased because of X, and then we examine that and decide whether we aren't or not. And yes, there'll be a reaction, but that means we check our facts more, and that's, we verify the information before we go on with it. We make sure it's not one, but I don't think that's a bad thing.
Now, one in four journalists do identify themselves as Democrats, fewer as Republicans, many as independents. Do you think that is an accurate count? When there is accusation, the liberal media bias, do you think that people that are in newsrooms generally share the same points of view? David, I'm going to point to you. I've just got about a minute and a half left.
Well, it depends on what you mean by media. You know, the biggest cable news show is Fox. The biggest radio show is Rush Limbaugh. I would argue
actually, I'm
going to
correct you. Morning Edition is the first, the number one listened to, most listened to radio program in America.
All
okay,
right.
Now you have 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think that we have to balance our the point that people can't be objective if you're a journalist is to me absurd, because judges are. ER doctors are, police officers are. Part of professionalism is handling issues without bias based on standards. And I think an awful
David,
lot of journalism does that.
I'll hold you right there because we have to say goodbye to Michael Barthel, senior researcher at Pew. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
David Hazinski, Bill Nygut, and Nzinga Burton are staying with us. Stick around. We've got more to talk about. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Tomorrow on the program, while the Senate prepares to advise and consent on Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court, we're going to break down how a case gets before the justices and what it means when they agree to hear it. Today marks the two-week anniversary of the shooting at the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland. Five journalists and staff members died that day. Two others were injured. Again, a deeply disturbed person seeking vengeance. But it is the conversations that event provoked that we're exploring today. Some people rushed to defend the work of journalists, and there were, despicably, threats on Reddit and 4chan applauding the act. So what is that relationship between the Americans and its media and how it's changed and why polls are showing that trust in the media is at an all-time low? With me on the program, a veteran reporter, Bill Nygut, host of GPB's Political Rewind and Two-Way Street, David Hazinski, professor of journalism at the University of Georgia in Athens, and Nzinga Burton. She's chair of the Mass Media Arts Department at Clark University. Let's go back to that. We broke off when we were talking about this was a strategy of the Newt Gingrich new contract with America to put down the press, to doubt their credentials. Now, we were also talking about President Trump's ongoing feud with the media. But back at the campaign, there was a conversation. This is the journalist Leslie Stahl. She was talking about a private conversation that she had with Donald Trump.
And it's just me and my boss and him. And he's attacking the press. And there were no cameras. There was nothing going on. And I said, you know, that is getting tired.
So she says it's getting tired. Trump's response to her is, well, if you make them doubt the media, then the bad things that they say about me will be discredited. Did the strategy work, first of all, Bill?
Well, yeah, it is working. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and by the way, attacking the media when they print critical stories or run on the air or in social media criticize you or reveal something about you as an individual has always been used as an inoculation against those charges. And that's across party lines. That's the standard response, which it's the media is out to get me, which, by the way, and I have to acknowledge it took me many years to get to this point. You really have to develop a thick skin about the criticism that you receive, either from the people you are covering or, for that matter, from the public. You want it. You know, David said an important thing. You do have to be mindful of reaction to what you're reporting, what you're talking about as a journalist. But you can't. You've got to have the toughness to say, oh, this comment that came in on social media about how I'm a a crazy right-wing Republican is silly. I can point to many examples where I've said things that make that not true. But it's always been a tactic. Trump has just elevated it to a whole new level.
Well, politicians, as you said, always. President Nixon famously hated the press. But has anybody called the press the enemy of the people? Have been so blatant?
No, that's what I'm saying. I think the president has raised it to a new level. One of the things I would say, it's interesting, because we could have, Michael, I had to leave the conversation, but, you know, it's interesting. Pew did a study that they published in June, in which they found that more than 80% of the people they surveyed, that 4,000 group, believes that journalism is important and that they have a responsibility to be reporting. But that same group said by some significant margins, we no longer trust the media sources that we deal with. That's fascinating. They believe in the institution. They don't believe in the way institutions are reporting today.
Well, this is a problem across institutions in much of American political and civic life right now. This is another thing from the 2016 trail. We did see photographs of Trump supporters wearing T-shirts that said rope tree journalist, some assembly required. Nasenga, I just want to ask, did you see that?
Yeah, I saw it. And when I was working in news regularly, race was my beat. So when you do race, or what I call the heavy lifting, race, class, gender, sexuality, as I'm sure you know, you tend to get lots of what I call hate mail via email. Sometimes you get it in letter form or what have you. So that that was not surprising. I think that's common. I think journalists, particularly journalists of color, especially, I won't say because I think it's all journalists, but especially journalists of color, women journalists who cover politics and issues that people actually pay attention to, and that really, you know, drive something deep, you know, touch people deeply. Definitely get those kinds of threats on a regular and ongoing basis.
Well, the question that Bill raised about trusting the institution, but not the news that comes out of them. Interesting side twist here in the Pew research. Don't trust the media, but trust my local paper. It's very much like the traditional, I don't like Congress, but I like my congressperson, you know, that kind of thing. What's the distinction going on there, do you think, that David, pick it up.
I think a lot of the reason they don't trust us is because they shouldn't. I think we haven't proven to them. I think what we have to do now is go out and prove to people we are telling the truth. We have to expose our values. We have to say what our sources are. We have sort of done that for a long time, but now newspapers are not the influencer that they did. There's nobody going to that city council meeting, and then we're doing pretend live shots in front of something that's kind of a facsimile of news, and people don't trust that. Well, they shouldn't. We have to do a better job of covering news. We have to do a better job of exposing our decision processes. We have to do a better job of telling people what our standards are. If we want them to believe us, then we have to prove to them that they should believe us. It's not that complicated.
We have to do a better job of covering communities, too.
Exactly.
And that's the other piece, because it's not, you know, one of the issues that I do want to say is, I do want to talk about just very briefly, is that, you know, this distrust of the media has been something that has, you know, been prevalent amongst communities of color and what I would call marginalized or disenfranchised communities, you know, since the invention of the printing press.
Where do you think that's coming from, Nasenga?
I think it's covering from the ways that communities are covered, from the ways that they are not covered, you know, what kind of stories are told or shared versus what kind of stories are not covered or shared. You know, when we don't do our due diligence, when we're not really investigating, so we're maybe interviewing people that may not even be really close to or connected with whatever the event is or incident is or what have you.
So a long history of no representation.
Yeah, little to no or very distorted representation, right?
If I could weigh it.
So, yeah, please.
So, Virginia, here's the way I translate some of what I'm hearing from David and Nasenga. On Political Rewind, our producer, Tom Faust, and I, on a regular basis, look at what we're going to talk about in any given show. And it's really tempting and easy to become wrapped up in the bright, shiny object of what's happening with Trump, the latest kerfuffle that he's involved with. And we say, no, we're not going to give in to that temptation. What we've got to do is represent our community. We've got to talk about issues that are relevant to the people of the state of Georgia, whether it's an election campaign going on right now, a legislative matter, a bill that's being presented that could have some impact. And the feedback we get is that that's what listeners like. I mean, it would be so easy to get wrapped up. And one of the issues of trust is, how many times have we seen the Washington Post or the New York Times, despite all the great journalism they do, report, oh, John Kelly's on his way out as chief of staff. Oh, the president's unhappy with Sarah Sanders. Sources tell us that she's about to go. He's about to go. You know, there's a certain point when you follow that kind of news, and it happens on CNN and MSNBC as well. At a certain point, that's when trust in the media, I think, starts to erode, partly because you're talking about anonymous sources, partly because you're reporting stories that seem exciting, and as I said, they're part of the bright, shiny object chase, but that people eventually realize, well, that's just another speculative story by a major news organization.
Well, this is, I'm sure, every editorial team sits around and has this meet, has these conversations. Yeah. But if you are not talking about the thing that everybody's talking about, do you feel like you're off the news? You know, where is the role of community? And this is what I want to put to the journalism professors, especially, where are the consumers here? Do your students deeply dive into local community issues, or are they interested in, as is happening more and more, political races that are becoming nationalized, news that is becoming nationalized? I don't know, Nasenga or David, do you want to start with that?
Well, they aren't to begin with, but then we force them to, and then they like it.
So without, the world is not your classroom without all of those students listening to that critical thinking. Is it possible to reach a wider audience?
That's actually part of what we teach them. As part of our role is to have you join the greater world and find out what journalism's role is in it rather than what your friends are talking about. And we have them go out in a community and they go, my God, there's good stories out there and interesting stuff that's important to people. Yep. That's school.
Nasenga?
Yeah, I was going to say, David and I work together at UGA. And, we send our students out to actually do reporting. They actually curate content. They actually put together news shows. I mean, this happens, of course, at Clark Atlanta University as well. But that's one of the things that we have to do. We have to, kind of get past the bias that you have walking into the door. Because, a lot of our students, because of their, this mediated society they're living in, they come in and they already think they're journalists because they've had a blog, for the last 5 years, and they've got like a million followers. So they're like, I'm just here for the degree. I'm just here for the credential. So you have to really like kind of reel them in and say, okay, listen, let me show you what this really is about. These are the things you really need to be talking about. And, that can happen, but it's very rare that you have that, particularly at such a young age. So, we do a lot of, getting them ready for the real world once they come in the door.
Well, bright, shiny objects are moneymakers for a lot of stations. Interesting. Go ahead, David.
That's the point. Students, we have very smart kids in both schools, and I think people get it and just have somewhat of a social commitment. But what they see is what they model themselves after. And when you're looking at CNN or MSNBC or Fox, and they have so merged the line between opinion and actual reporting and news, they think that opinion is news. And they're not stupid. It's not that they don't know what they're doing. It's what they see on the air all the time. It's what they read all the time. And that's how they came to that conclusion. And we have to back them off and say, no, wait a minute. There's a significant line between opinion and analysis and actual factual reporting. That's part of what journalism schools do, is tell them where the line is. But unfortunately, they see it crossed every day.
Well, it is interesting that the only private sector industry that is ensconced in the Constitution is the news media, the right to a free and fair press. So if we have, let's say, let's say, a financially driven press that is looking for more eyes. And this is how their business models work. Of course, it has always been thus on some level. What does that do to a democracy and the way that people receive and interpret their information? Bill?
Well, it creates significant problems. At the same time, I would suggest to you, yes, we have a certain amount of responsibility must be placed on the CNNs and the MSNBCs and the Foxes, which in pursuit of, money, are delivering news specifically to their audiences. But I also think that the consumer has some role in all of this. You know, when I was doing TV journalism, doing minute and a half reports on a particular political campaign or an issue going on down at the legislature, people would call me up and they'd say, well, you didn't tell us enough about that. We need more information. And I'd always say to them, wait, I can only do so much. You have a responsibility, too. Go out and do your own research. You figure out what you think about an issue by not forcing me to be your only source of information. So by that, I mean, it's hard watching. I try to watch Fox, CNN, MSNBC, not because I think I'm going to get balance, but I'm going to hear what the disparate voices are saying. On the other hand, I do think I get more balance when I read in the morning the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and yes, Breitbart. So, I mean, I do think there are obligations that citizens have to be more engaged and informed in a way that they don't really want to do right now. It's too hard.
We all know people who just love to get in a lather, you know, watching the same people yelling at each other.
Right.
You know, and I think we've raised some great questions. I'm not asking for you to wrap up. What's going to happen now? You know, how do we fix this kind of thing? But David and Nisenka, I'm just wondering your thoughts going forward. As we're looking at this whole media landscape, is there going to be a shift? Is there going to be a tipping point where partisan media just doesn't make it anymore, or do you think it's going to split further and further? Why don't we begin with you, Nisenka?
I think it's going to split further and further, but I think that it'll eventually come back around to some sense of normalcy. I think that we need to just do a better job of informing and educating the public about what they should be getting and looking for in their media outlets.
How about you, David? We've got about a minute left.
I don't think any of the systems are working well, other than NPR, of course.
You just earned yourself a tote bag, David.
I'm only half kidding. The point is, corporate media has taken over. That's interested only in profit. I've just started a nonprofit to see if I can help local nonprofit over-the-top news organizations get started. I don't think there's an alternative for people, and I think those people who say they want unbiased news and fair local reporting, I'd like to help work towards giving them that alternative, of giving them some place to go, because I don't think corporations are going to do it, and I don't think NPR doesn't have the money to go any further than it does, and newspapers are dead.
David,
but we have to have an alternative.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. David Hazinski, professor of journalism at the University of Georgia in Athens, and Nisenka Burton, chair of mass media arts at Clark, and Bill Nygut, host of GPB's Political Rewind. That's all we have time for. Thank you so much.
It's been fun.